The description goes on here of old age overtaking the person. Yom shiyozu shomrei habayis, the guards of the house will tremble. Limbs. It's afsu anshe hechoy revot la'atoychanos. The stomach doesn't work. Kimi'etu choshach oyes barubos. Eyesight becomes weak. Sugud losaim bashuk b'shval kol atachano. Yokum l'kol atzipa. Can't sleep at night. All it needs is a bird chirping. Shachuk kol v'nashiyam. Problem. Really, you're deaf. It's deaf, so you can't have a note from music during the day. So you'd think that at night he'll sleep because he can't hear the little noises. But it's not that way. By day he can't hear the song. At night he wakes up. Gam mikavoya yiro. Heights bother him. Bechaschatim baderech. His fear on the roads. He's nervous. He's afraid to try anything new. Yonet hashoket. Yistakel hechogav. Sofa v'yoinam, the whole thing gradually runs down. Ki holach odam v'besalom v'sabav v'bashuk asoyftem. Adash lo yirochek, lo yirosek, chevel hakesav, it's the spine, so it's kulas hazoav, it's the skull, it's shovakad al amabuav, noras hagargal al aboem. V'yoshoif he'ofem al ha'oretz k'shehoyah. And the earth returns, the dust returns to the ground as it was. Ruach toshav el ha'elokim asher nesana, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. That's the moment of Misa. The moment of Misa is when the earth, when the dust, yoshav he'ofer al ha'oretz k'shehoya, Ruach toshav el ha'elokim. So we're dealing over here with the combination of Kuf and Neshama. That's probably the greatest mystery of life which exists. Because there's no way at all that we can understand how a Kuf and a Neshama get together. Because a Neshama isn't anything which we can grasp, doesn't have any physical kind of existence. Right? When we think of a neshama, we probably think of some ghostly presence. It can be nothing. So it's a bit of oxygen, a bit of hydrogen, but it's not. It's nothing. In other words, it's nothing at all. When we use is in a physical sense, the verb to be, see, that's b'chlal something which we have to know about. That a lot of times we get balled up with wrong hasogas of things by not being aware of the inexactness of the words we use. Yisoid ha-yisoidus, amot ha-chokmos, or whatever, sheyesh shon motzi rishon. Right? We have to believe that there exists, there is a motzi rishon, that there is a God. Right? Now that's a phrase which makes very little sense. Because what does ising mean, right? There is. So in our vocabulary, is means something very specific. The verb to be. And the verb to be, normally, the way it clings in our minds, the way it sounds to us, we're talking about something physical. There is. I am. I am a being. I am a being because I have a physical presence. I have something which is tangible. I have something which can be experienced physically. To use the verb to be relative to the Ribbono Shel Olam is misleading. To use it relative to Neshama is misleading. Neshama has no physical presence at all. So it is quite literally nothing, where nothing means that it is no thing, right? It is no physical or tangible thing. And obviously, if you're dealing with something which is no thing, then you cannot assign a place to it. Because place, the concept of place, the concept of location, is of course associated with physical existence, right? You can't take a lump of nothing and put it down somewhere. Yeah? If it's something, it can be in a certain place. So even though in my mind I can understand that there, again, excuse my language, that there is an existence which has no tangible definition. It's different than an idea. When we talk about an idea, we can talk about an idea having an existence of its own. Love is a concept. Beauty is a concept. Sorrow is a concept, right? But that's not what the neshama is. Those are ideas which don't exist. They only are figments of our mind. But the neshama does exist. It is there. God does exist. He is there. So it's a different kind of existence of which we have absolutely no hasoga whatsoever. But then to sort of add insult to injury and to say not only is there a kind of ising, which means beans to me, but that is associated with a particular place, that's taking things a little far, right? I was, my neshama is somewhere inside me. That's altogether a concept which means nothing, really. Because if it has no dimensions and it has no physical properties, so then in what way is it inside me any more than it's over there? Right? So with what is it associated? As my guf is a physical reality. My neshama doesn't exist in physical terms. So how do the two get together? Well, you know, you don't know, but we've mentioned it before, and if you learned Shachmar, you know, that that's what the Ramo learns Pshat in the Siyum of the Brocha of Reifei Chodbosa Umafli Lasos. That's the Hemshech, that's the bridge. The bridge is between the Brocha of Asher Yotzer, which deals with the body of the person, the Kovim, Chalulim, Chalulim, and the Brocha of Akain, Shamash Masatubi, Tehoiro, Yat, Vrosa, Tehitzata, Tehapachtubi, which deals with the Neshama. And of course, that's why it doesn't start with Boruch, because it's a Brocha Smucha Lechavata, and it belongs after Reifei Chodbosa Mafli Lasos. So, what is the Pele? Why is the Indian of Pele mentioned over here? Pele means a wonder. Pele is something which we cannot grasp. Ramo learns that is the Pele. The Pele is that somehow, in some way which is beyond our comprehension, Guf and Neshama are joined together. And there is a total entity which consists of Guf and Neshama. So, death is that point where that togetherness becomes Nifrad. Something which somehow held together throughout the life of the person, at the moment of death, that ends. Difference between animal dying and human being dying is that although by the animal there is also a life force, which in the literature is referred to as a nefesh, but it's some kind of life force which makes a difference. Take an animal to a lab after it's died, and you dissect it, you won't find any less there than when it was alive. The difference is only that before it was alive and now it's dead. What precisely life is, how philosophy today defines the idea of life, I don't know. But certainly in our terms, the way the Torah teaches us things, at least my understanding of it is, so I'm not sure that I'm right, there is such a thing as a nefesh, that there is some life force which imbues the animal with life and which separates from the animal when it dies. By an Adam, there's something more than that, right? Which in the Tefillah, which we discussed before, is described as a neshama. Shama shnosat v'tahori atavrosat v'yitzatat v'nefachtat v'nofach is to blow in. V'yipach v'apav nishmas chayim. So man then is a combination of guf and neshama. And of course, it's up to the person to decide the relative values of Guf and Neshama. The fact that they are one unison, one unity, was of course expressed in that medrash, which we all know. More gives the medrash gives the zach that the lover, the guf and the neshama are going to come to the Bein Shlalom, going to say, the neshama is going to say, like, you can't blame me for the chatoim, because it's the guf who ate, it's the guf who walked, it's the guf who did whatever he did, so what's it got to do with me? So the neshama doesn't want to be punished. And the guf is going to come along and say, yeah, but it's certainly not my fault, because without the neshama I would have been an even diamond. So what do you want from me? So the Bein Shem is the marshal of the Bal HaPardes, the fellow who had an orchard, and he hired two watchmen. One of them was blind, and the other one was lame. And he said, I want the two of you to watch them. Because he figured like this, that the blind person, so he won't see the fruit, so he won't want to steal them. And the lame person sees the fruits and will want to steal them, but he can't get there. So they were smart, so the lame person said to the blind person, yeah, why don't you carry me on your shoulders and I'll direct you where to go. So they went and they garnered all the fruits, and Melech came, and he figured out what they had done. He put them on top of each other and was done them together. Also, that's Chazal's way of saying that there's one unit. Incidentally, that's a good gemara to know if you want to know some pshat in some other chazal. For example, we have a gemara in Saita, we have a Shimshon. It was a Shimshon chiger b'shtei raglav haya. That Shimshon was a chiger. He was a lame person. What does that mean? That Shimshon was kula neshama. There was no guf there at all. See, because in the thought world of chazal, the neshama is a chiger. Right? It's all eyes, no legs. Which means that the neshama is that part of the person which sees, which apprehends, which understands, which absorbs, but it can't do anything about it. It's eyes without legs. The guf is the legs without the eyes. One of those mishalim, where we don't know what the chazal could possibly mean unless we get ourselves used to knowing that in Agoda, Chazal use different terms. In other words, different words mean different things. And once we know that in the thought world of Chazal, the neshama is a chiger, so we know that when Chazal said, Shimshon chiger b'shtei raglav haya, what he means is that he was kulei kodesh, there wasn't any physical natir there altogether. That's some parenthetical. But it does lead us into a havana of the zach, which we ought to at least say to ourselves, I don't know how much lemaisa means to us, that is, that although the Adam consists of guf and neshama, the two seem to be mutually absorbing. In other words, they don't live happily together. It's a little bit like the Vaisreutze zu Habonim Bekirba. When you have an Esav and a Yaakov together, so then you have trouble. Each one tries to dominate. And it seems to be that in the Guf and the Neshama also, there is a constant struggle for domination. I don't mean that the Guf is an Esav, the Guf is not. The Guf is totally neutral. The Guf is there. There's nothing wrong with the Guf. There's nothing right with the Guf. It's neutral, it's not good, it's not bad. It's just there. The Neshama is there to try and help the person do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants them to do. But they don't happily coexist. And therefore, what the neshama tries to do is to predominate and be mekadesh the guf and make the guf a little bit a part of the neshama, so that when you define the person, you define him in terms of his neshama, not in terms of his guf. He's a neshama mensch. The guf tries to do the same thing with the neshama. He wants to defile it. He wants to make the neshama less of a ruchnistic being and more of an animal kind life force. And there's this constant struggle. You see, for example, from this chazal by Shimshon. Shimshon chiger b'shtei raglav haya, that means that his madrega of kedusha was so phenomenal that he was kulay kodesh. So there's this struggle. Find people who can fast tamesim on Hashir. They have very little need for sleep. They have very little need for any of the other physical amenities. Pashas, that means that they are much more neshama people, right? They are people by whom the neshama has learned to dominate. And therefore the guf, which has these physical needs, is sort of in the total being of the person, much less dominant and therefore much less demanding. People who are very much involved in that tzorchei haguf, this is important, that's important, this has to be just so, that has to be just so. They are more guf people, and they are using their neshama as a life force. They don't allow it to have hergeshim of sanctity. That's the Gemara, which we've mentioned before many times. I don't like to talk about Gemaras, which are beyond my madrigal, just to sit here and darshan, but at least to know the Gemara, so that whoever can have himself to that level of living would be Ashrei Chelko. That's the Gemara which describes the Misa of Tzaddikim in contrast to the Misa of Roshoim. That the Misa of Tzaddikim is like extracting a fly from a glass of milk. Very, very easy. In other words, the Tzaddik doesn't struggle in his death. You know the English term, death throes. Death throes implies pain and struggle. And sometimes a Misa, the act of dying, can be a very, very prolonged, painful struggle. In other words, that the Shama does not give up easily, or the Guf does not easily yield the Neshama. Their throes, pangs, Chevle Moves. So, the Misa Tzaddikim, ideally, would be without Chavolim at all, without any pain. It's like extracting a fly from a glass of milk. And the reason is very simple, because there the tie between the guf and the neshama is a very, very nebulous one. It's hardly there at all. There the guf, the more and more neshamatic the person is, the more the guf is unattached. It's just like a garment, a little bit like by Olam Harishon, Kodem Hachet, that he wasn't ashamed of his guf because he had no shayfas to him. It was just like a jacket that he was wearing. So there, death ought to be a very easy affair. Other kind of dying, the Gemara describes as trying to extract a skein of wool from a thorn bush. You can think of that if you take a bunch of wool and you wind it around and around and around in a thorn bush where the thorns sort of grab a hold of the wool, and it's very, very difficult to pull the two apart because they are very closely and firmly attached to one another. That's the Mises of Shoim, which, because the person has sort of created a very, very strong bond with the Guf and the Neshama, because he has defined his life in terms of his physical existence, so then the Misa is a very, very a difficult process, because it's a matter of extracting the Neshama, which is supposed to go up again to the Ribbono Shel Olam, Ruach Toshav El Ho'elokim Asher Nesona. It's a very, very complicated, difficult procedure to undo the many very firm ksharim which have been forged between the two. So, I don't know whether we should even talk about such gemaras. None of us are holding by a level of ehrlichkeit. We should be able to say that we are more neshama people than guf people. My say is that our physical life is very important to us. Right? We don't like skipping a lunch. We don't like skipping a breakfast. We don't like having an uncomfortable room. We don't like it when the steam is broken. We don't like it when there's no hot water. The physical needs which we have do impinge very, very much on our lives. And just as a goal for which a person might strive, it would be nice if they impinge a little less. If a person would be able to try and live the kind of life where these things are a little less important. Now, The shaila is, if we want to test ourselves and find out where are we, in other words, how would we define a person who is very much involved with his kuf, and how could we define a person who is more of an neshama person? Now, let's not define it in terms of having no physical needs. All of us do have physical needs, and therefore it's not a particularly useful definition. Say, perhaps, tzaddikim, or those among you who will aspire to be tzaddikim, I'm sure you all should and would, and will, if you work hard, right? So these are madrigas which you can one day perhaps aspire to. But let's talk more down to earth. What is a guf person and what is a neshama person? What is the faculty which most clearly, which is most sort of, can't think of the word that I want to use, indigenous to the guf? In other words, that if you think of a guf, it's that quality which is there and which is most clearly essential to the nature of gufness, as opposed to what one would suppose would be the function of neshama. In what middah would you say do guf and neshama define each other? I have no idea whether what I'm thinking is right. It just happens to sort of make sense to me the way I'm thinking at the moment. Who's got some ideas? In other words, if you would want to define a basic middah, we know a guf likes to eat, we know a guf likes to drink, we know a guf likes to sleep, right? But that's not the basic thing. Now, what is the basic quality of gufness and the basic quality of non-gufness? Anybody have any ideas? No, yeah, I think that's extremely good. Extremely good in the sense that that's what I was thinking of. It could be that there are better definitions, which I wasn't thinking of. Anybody else have any other ideas before we go on? Huh? Uh-huh, okay. Which I think probably is also a function of what Gedalia said. Yeah, I think that very, very clearly, the guf is a taker, and the neshama is a giver. Let's explain that a little bit. Well, that the guf is a taker, it's obvious, because that is the nature of physicality. You see, one of the most basic definitions of a physical existence is that two of us can't have the same thing. In terms of space, very simply, right? If I'm sitting on this chair, you can't be sitting on this chair. If I have this thing, you can't have this thing. That's the nature of physical existence. That two physical objects are by nature antagonistic to one another. Because each one needs to be sustained, and whatever the one uses for his sustenance is not available to the other one. So by definition, when you have two discrete physical entities, that means two physical entities which are absolutely separate, of course they're not antagonistic to each other. When you have a screw and a screwdriver, right, they're made to work together. But if you have two discrete physical existences, that means that they are separate, then by nature they're antagonistic to one another, and each one wants to drag to itself that which it needs. And if there's a shortage of material, which they both need, then they fight each other. That's where wars come from. You look in the animal world, that's what's happening constantly, right? You see animals fighting with one another because they're encroaching on each other's living room, or encroaching on each other's feeding grounds, and so on. So physical existence presupposes a taking. There's nothing, period, absolutely nothing in a physical existence which makes me give. Right? It's always a constant taking. If we find in the physical world a giving, then that's also a taking. That's the preservation of the means of the mother protects the child. So that's an instinct which is placed into the physical world, which deals with self-preservation. And self-preservation, of course, extends beyond the unit. It includes the species and so on. So, but the etzem chefze of physicality is an chefze of taking. The etzem chefze of neshama, the etzem metzius of a ruchnistic being, is giving. And the reason for that is very poshut. This I heard once in a maimer which I heard by prayer from Rav Putnam Zatzalwa. The Chanukah de Geshmuz. He brought the Maral. Maral on the, mentioned it before, the, on the bracha of Arat Tzadikim. Had this strange sort of confluence of the people who are mentioned in Arat Tzadikim. Arat Tzadikim, Bala Hasidim, Bala Zikne Amcho Beis Yisrael, Bala Pletas Sarfreyim, right? So, who's the sore thumb over them? Who doesn't fit into that list? Like, which of the tzaddikim, the chassidim, ziknei amcho beis yisrael, the pleitas afreyim, or geirei hatzedek? So, who doesn't fit in? What are the geirim doing over there? Yeah, chassidim can get together with tzaddikim, they can get together with soifrim and with skenim. They all describe wise people, one degree or another, of Talmidei Chachamim. What's that? Olenu? What about Olenu? Oh, the Olenu. I thought you meant the Tfilo Olenu. I didn't understand. I had enough trouble with the Geirim there. I didn't know how Olenu came to me. But, how's it going? Tzadikim, Hasidim, 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 okay? Well, maybe if we explain the Geirim, we can understand the Olenu too. But what are the Geirim doing then? Why the Geirim? Geirim, Geirim. So the Maral says, this famous Yisoid, that, on the contrary, the Brocha is a Brocha for Geirim. All of them are Geirim. The Tzadikim are Geirim, the Hasidim are Geirim, the Skenim are Geirim, the Seifrim are Geirim. Says, why are they all Geirim? He says it's very short but very pregnant phrase, because the seichel is a ger ba'olam hazeh. In other words, these are all seichel people. The tzaddikim, the chassidim, and the skenim are people of seichel, of the mind. And the seichel is a ger ba'olam hazeh. They're all gerim. In other words, it's a bracha of gerim. It's a bracha, a tefillah for people who don't belong. I thought maybe the olenu come in there, but we don't belong either. Right? But, what? Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. The people, although, that is exactly the problem. The problem of whether I am a tzaddik or a chosid or a cipher or a, what do you call it, is, am I a ger or not? That is a very, very clear definition. Yeah? The regular people are not mentioned in the bracha separately because they are not geirim ba'olam hazeh. In other words, if they manage to make their lives a very kavuadik kind of life, if they feel very at home, if the values of olam hazeh are their values, then as a matter of fact, they're not geirim. Right? So the geirim is the seichel is a geir ba'olam hazeh. That is the big klal. So Rav Putnam, I don't know whether this is what this, I mean, I don't, the Maral doesn't say it over there, but he says it in any other place, I don't know whether this Rav Putnam has, but I just don't remember. But Rav Putnam said this. He was explaining that the side that mitzvah more from the teaching, from the giving of his wisdom, than from absorbing wisdom. So he reasoned like this. He says, what must we assume that if a zach is shaloi b'mkaimai, saying that the seichel is a ger ba'olam hazeh, right? The seichel doesn't belong here. So what's it doing over here? In other words, what is the only possible answer for a unit being where it doesn't belong? So if it doesn't belong, then why is it here? The Secha is a ger by Olam Hazeh, so keep it where it's not a ger. Where is it not a ger? In the Olam HaNeshamas, in the Olam of the Seichel, in the Olam of Kedusha. So what's it doing over here? If it's not a Taishav here, if it's a ger. There's only one answer to that. It must be here to give. It must be here to be Mashpia. In other words, it's not here for its own purpose. Because for its own purpose, it wouldn't be here. It doesn't have to be here. It could be where it belongs. What is the only explanation of a foreign unit being over here? The only explanation for that is that it's here to give, to be Mashpia. That's how he's Masbir, the Indian of Talmida Yosef Mikula. Says because anything that does what its tachlis is to do doesn't lose from that. It gains from that. Yeah? When you use your muscles, you don't get weak, you get strong. Right? Because that's what the muscles are there for. They're there to be used, so the user makes them strong. If I give away something, if I have a bunch of apples, and I give you some, so then I'm losing those apples. Because I don't get more apples from that, I get fewer apples from that. Because the function of an apple is to be eaten, not to be mashpia. But I have apples to eat, so when I give them away, so I can't eat them. So I've lost. But my mind, the whole mitzvah of my mind is to be mashpia. First and foremost, to try and make a mensch out of me. Right? So it wants to be mashpia on me. That's why it's here. Seichel is a ger ba'olam hazeh, and that is why it's here. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu send it here? Because the Ribbono Shel Olam said, here there's a lump of guf, and that needs some tikkun. I'll take a neshama, and I'll put him in there. I'll take a seichel, and I'll put him in there, and I'll try and make a shtickle mensch out of him. Right? So, mitalmida yoyse mikulam. My seichel is not only interested in mashpia on me, and being mashpia on me, it's also interested in being mashpia on you. It wants not only to make me into a mensch, it wants to make you into a mensch also. So that is why the seichel, by definition, is a giving unit. It's something that by its very nature is giving. So here we have the two nekudas where guf and neshama are irreconcilably at different poles. The guf is constantly dragging to itself. The neshama is constantly wanting to give. Rav Dessler, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, learns pshat that this is the teretz in the Ibn Ezra's kasha, the famous kasha of how can there be an issa of Lo Sachmaid. Right, Ibn Ezra's kashi by the Seiros HaDibrois. How can the Torah forbid me to be jealous? How can the Torah tell me don't want? It's easy enough for the Torah to tell me don't steal. That I can do very well. I can control my actions. A person is supposed to be able to control his actions. And if I feel like stealing something from you, the Torah says don't. That's okay. But how can the Torah tell me don't want? Now, strictly speaking, of course, Lasachma doesn't mean don't want. Lasachma means don't take it from him. In other words, don't do actions which will eventually make him want to give it to you, or rather not make him want to give it to you, but make him give it to you just to get you off his back. Right? But certainly the Pirush HaMilos of Lasachma is don't want. Don't be jealous. Don't be envious. So-and-so has a nice car. Don't be envious of him. He has a nice suit. Don't be jealous. Now, how can I not be jealous? I like cars. And I wish I had it. So how can the Torah tell me, don't wish that you had it? So the way I understand, the way I remember, Rav Dessler used to be Masbir. Said like this. He says, the hallmark of physicality vis-a-vis spirituality is, like we said before, the impossibility of two of us having the same thing. In physical terms, we cannot both have the same thing, right? There's one apple and there's two of us, there's you and there's I, am I, right? So one of us is going to get it. If you're going to eat it, I'm not going to eat it, and if you're, I'm going to eat it, you're not going to eat it. So in those terms, I can be very, very jealous of you because I like apples. And here it is, you're taking the apple, the last apple, and you're eating and I don't get to eat it. That makes me unhappy. Now in spiritual things, he says it's not that way. So it's the most spiritual thing in the world, the thing that's closest to ruchnius in our world is the light. The light is something very ruchniistic. It's also physical, but it's pretty close to ruchnius. There's anything in the physical world which is pretty close to ruchnius, it's the light. I'm not a physicist, but I understand that the speed of light is the fastest thing around. So if we define physical and ruchnius in terms of lethargy, which somebody said just now, laziness, which happens to be true, right? In other words, that we associate, that's also Maral's, he saw it always, that's why Zrizos by Yitzias Mitzrayim, and as the Chiposon, because always speed is associated with something unphysical. So light is a pretty unphysical kind of thing. And light, we know that Ner Le'echad, the mayor. There are a number of people here in the room, none of us are getting in the other one's way as far as the light is concerned. We're breathing each other's oxygen and making less available for everyone else. But as far as the light is concerned, we're not bothering each other. Ki hu zeh, right? So in a spiritual kind of way, in a ruchnistic kind of context, we both have the light, right? So Dessler was mevaya that in spiritual terms, there's no room for chimud. There's no room for being jealous. Why? Because although we can't both have the apple physically, but we can both have the apple spiritually. Are you going to say, what use is a spiritual apple to you? You like apples, right? And spiritual apples don't taste. But that's just the point of spirituality, that it's only in physical terms that the function of an apple is to eat. In spiritual terms, an apple has quite different functions. What are the functions of an apple in spiritual terms? What are you supposed to do with a spiritual apple? Or rather, what are you spiritually supposed to do with a physical apple? Well, Abdesla says very simply. Now, it's if we perceive of everything which the Rebbein Hashem gives us as a means of doing Avodas Hashem, as a means of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, therefore, the same apple which in a physical sense I can only eat, in a spiritual sense I can use differently. For one thing, I can be happy that you have it. So I'm using the apple. In other words, I'm using the apple as a means of pleasing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm using the apple as a means of generating love. If the apple wouldn't exist, there wouldn't be a point of contact between you and me. Now that you have an apple, and I don't have an apple, that apple can be a means of generating an outpouring of giving in my part. I'm happy that you have the apple. I'll run to get you a knife to peel it. I'll wash it off for you. I'll bring you a drink to go with it. Right? In other words, I can center a whole bunch of activities around that apple and have it, not have it. See, it's only in physical terms that I don't have it. Spiritual terms, I do have it. So therefore, why should I be chaymed? Why should I be jealous of you? Why should I be jealous of you that you have the apple when I don't have it, when I do have it? See, because in spiritual terms, you owning the apple legally doesn't take it away from me. I can still use it in order to be a good person. So there's no mokum for Leisachmoy. Now it's the Issa of Leisachmoy. The Torah tells us, Leisachmoy, the Torah is telling us, Zay a mensch, be a little bit more a man of Ruach than a man of the body. It's only the body that craves the apple. The Ruach is happy not to have it. Eventually you'll come to learn that it's Hashem, you'll develop in Avodas Hashem. The times will come when you have to deny yourself things. You have to abstain from things. The things that you may want very much, can't have them. Have you lost thereby? In other words, when you deny yourself something that you would like very much to do, but you don't do it. So, what has happened to you? Have you lost or have you gained? Have you given away or have you taken? Versteht sich? That you gain immeasurably more than you lose. And that's the hesbo of it, right? It's only in the physical sense that you have to have the thing in order to have it. In the spiritual sense, it gives you immeasurably more by denying yourself the thing than by indulging in it. The indulgence gives you the sheer of the indulgence. That's got a limit. It's time bound. It's quality bound. It's whatever it is. It's what it is, v'nama amen, and that's it. Denying it to yourself gives you infinity. Makes you into a mensch, makes you into a gavra, machazik your neshama, makes you into a chosh of a person. It's ein adoyim. So, no place for lesachmer. Punkt verkehrt. The biggest simcha that a person should have, theoretically, and it's not so hard when you think about it, the biggest simcha that a person should have is not to have the apple. Right? What's he going to do with the apple if he has it? Eat it, yeah? But if he doesn't have it, boy, then he's really lucky, right? Because not having it, he can use that same apple to carve out infinity for himself. So, what kind of person am I? What kind of person am I interested in becoming? Should I be a taking person, or should I be a giving person? It was Taina before Pesach. In the Pshat, is an Emes of Pshat. Ilu kevonu lifnei ha-sinai, ilo nosan lono es ha-toiro dayenu. I mean, when you go to the plaza and you find that the stores are closed, so you, what's Dayenu? I mean, like you had a schlep, you got to go there all the way and got there and it gets too late. So that's not very good. And here, Ilu kevonu lifnei ha-sinai, you would have schlepped us all the way to ha-sinai. And the store would have been closed and there wouldn't have been any teure. Dayenu. Would have been beautiful. What's the Dayenu of kevonu lifnei ha-sinai? And what would have been Dayenu? So I thought like this, I don't know what I'm right. Says that Zoya, I have a stick of a glimmer over that I'm right. Somebody heard it once from me and he said it over to Rav Wolben, and that's a soil, and he was my Kabbalah, so I said, it's yeah, it's a stick of glimmer, isn't it? I thought that the word is, that's Shetach and Chazal, that Vayichan Yisrael, the Tacht Yisrael, that's how the Loshen goes. So, Vayichan, Kenegatha. I'll come from the Loshen singular, right? So Chazal say, Ki ish echad, v'lev echad. You know, it was like one unit, thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people. And they were Ki ish echad, v'lev echad. So how did they get to be Ki ish echad, v'lev echad? It's a beautiful song. Can you imagine what was doing over there? You think you got troubles in the dormitory, right? But can you imagine in the desert, Vasatzach Katan, with the tents and with the people getting in each other's way and with the horses and the dogs and the cats and the camels? Must have been an absolute nightmare, right? With so many opportunities for quarreling, for treading on each other's toes, for getting in each other's ways. Must have been totally catastrophic. From this thing, here they said, Ki ish echad v'lev echad. How did they manage that? It was the Teretz that when they were sitting at the bottom of the Sinai with their minds focused on the Torah, they knew that tomorrow they were going to get the Torah. So they were able to latch on to something a little spiritual. That was what focus of their mind. That was what they were thinking about. That was what was occupying their mind. And suddenly all the nuisances and all the Reibungen, the getting in each other's way, the annoyances, the tainess, and the good tainess, and the bad tainess, and the whole thing, all became so totally irrelevant. See, because these things become little things. They're big if you live in that world. They're little if you don't live in that world. B'shum oifen, we can't understand when you have two kids quarreling over a toy. Each one wants this doll. There's 65 dolls sitting there, right? But each one has to have this doll. So a grown-up person doesn't understand. So why doesn't he understand? Because he doesn't live in the world of dolls. And these dolls, which are totally real to the baby, to the children, and therefore it can generate an unbelievable hatred. He's taking my doll away. To the grown-up, it's totally meaningless because it has no shaykhus there. The analogy isn't very hard to draw, right? Things that make us mad are also bebrinas dolls. Said over so often, the Rambam, what like sick kind, right? Torah doesn't let you get mad if I don't lend you my car. Torah says, if you then next week don't lend me yours. So either you're over the kima, or if you remember it, you're over the tira. But just today again, so my wife Taka asked me, like we came up by the meal in the context of how can the Torah asa natira? So she thinks that's the hardest issa in the Torah. Male and Nakima you can live with, yeah, alright, so I'll give you the hammer. Right? Of a not to be allowed the luxury of being mad, right? I mean, allow me at least to give you the hammer and feel, yeah, that I'm a tzaddik. And Matonish, the Torah says, like Sita, if you give the bear, if you lend the hammer, the guy didn't lend you his hammer. And today you lend him your hammer. And you allow yourself the luxury of saying, I'm a mensch. So you're over Loisa Sita, like Sita. That's a tough feeling. Like it's such a beautiful sensation. So why does the Torah forbid it to us? Why does the Torah not let us? And Vida, how can the Torah ask us? How can the Torah tell me forget? I don't forget, I remember. So why is it taken? Better, how come I remember that and I don't remember a Torah? Don't you also sometimes forget a Torah? What's taka the difference? That's the difference. The Torah says something which matters to me, I don't remember. I don't forget. Something that matters to me less, I do forget. So the Rambam, there's nothing in Olam Hazeh which is sufficiently important that you should remember it. Right? The guy didn't lend you his axe. That is not a significant event in your life. Just forget it. Don't let it be koine shvise in your mind. She'ein ba'olam hazeh, the Rambam says, there's nothing in this world which is sufficiently important that you should allow it to sit in your mind, giving you mental ulcers, right? And generating a hatred. He didn't lend it to you. Fine. There's a fly sat on your head. To say that. Yeah? You don't remember that. It shouldn't impinge on your conscience. Now, what the Torah is telling us is, be grown up. Don't play with dolls. Dolls you understand. Understand hammers too. Yichan Yisrael betachte saha. That when the Yidden sat at the bottom of Har Sinai, they suddenly realized that nothing mattered. That all those annoyances and all those petty little things. Why petty? It's the etymology of petty. Petty cash. Petty annoyances. Petty from the French. Petit, small, right? It's so small that it's not relevant. It doesn't carry any significance. No reason why you should be goyreset. Is ilu kevona lifnei ha-sinai, v'lai nosan lona es ha-toyra dayenu. Right? if he would have brought us before Hasina and taught us this truth, that nothing matters very much, that in the presence of a greater truth, in the presence of a greater experience, nothing is very important. Dayenu, that's a lesson to go through life with. But then I don't need a Torah. That's the most beautiful experience. If we had a Zach, if we had a secret weapon, which in one shot could wipe out all the things that bother us. I don't like this, I don't like that, I have tinnitus on him, I have tinnitus on him, this is no good, my woman, whatever it is. Let's say we could have a magic medicine, which in one moment would eliminate that nothing annoys me anymore. I'm the most placid, happy Bria in the world. We would want to take such a pill. What you learned at Har Sinai was that there is such a pill. Focus on the Torah, focus on something ruchnistic, and nothing else is going to matter. It's all going to be perfectly happy and sweet and good. There won't be any problems. So that's the what. In other words, we have problems in the life. We have problems in our lives to the extent that the guf is significant in our lives. To that extent that we can stop being takers and we can become givers. To that extent, life becomes a totally happy place. So Mishunatakli aside, it becomes a totally happy place. Because the things that make us sad, and the things that make us depressed, the things that make us have tinnitus, are all taking things. They're not giving things. That's the Mishunatakli aside. So we can't, I guess, I can't, imagine you can't also, talk about ourselves as people who are neshama people in the sense that our physical things don't matter to us. They do. Perhaps we can hope that one day we can wean ourselves away from them a little bit. For a bit in time they do. But to be a giving kind of a person, rather than a taking kind of a person, that is something that everybody can expect of himself. Not totally, but to some extent. And that itself will also be a problem to what extent, to what extent he has subsumed his guf under his neshama, or his neshama under his guf. Big, big zach. Amir Chachonim, Mabim, Sholem Ba'olam. Why are Talmidei Chachamim Mabim Sholem Ba'olam? Rav Shalom Bonoyach. Why are Talmidei Chachamim Mabim Sholem Ba'olam? That's the reason. Because why should they fight? There's nothing to fight about. The things that normally people fight about, they don't have to fight about. They don't get in each other's way. Read, if you have the time once, read the Chazon Ish in Emunah B'Tochen, where he talks about the ideal way of how Baal Torah should treat competition comes to town. It's Pasuk Es Gevul, when it does apply, when it doesn't apply. But that's already say a guy opens a competition. Right? I've got a grocery store. Guy down the block opens a grocery store. So how much Kiddush Shem Shemayim he describes over there. If I go over to the guy and I say, listen, it's so nice that you're moving here, so happy to have you. Let me give you some aces. These and these people are good wholesalers. Maybe you'll get a good deal over there. And don't go there on Thursdays because that's when they bring in the bad stuff. Go there on Wednesdays. Right? That's a beautiful zach. See, that would be done by a neshama person. A person who lives with a divine neshama, who knows what the score is, who knows where it's at, and who knows that he's not going to live or die on the extra apple that he's going to sell. He is a good person in the same situation. Machloik, because he has kindness, he has been teurer. That's a zach. That's the Talmidei Chachamim, Amavim Sholem Ba'olam. The person's a true Talmud Chacham. It means that he's taka that which the Torah wants us to be, then there is no motor for machlokes. Because then each Talmud Chacham will be a totally giving person. And he'll find his fulfillment not in what he has, but in what he doesn't have. Not in what he gets, but in what he gives. And that would be a Ribui Sholem. Okay.